Okay. Good morning. Thank you for coming. Quick question. How many folk were here last night? Okay, right, fine. Memorable, wasn't it? For those of you that weren't here last night, for my demos, everything broke. The whole thing. Nothing worked. I did a 45-minute talk and nothing worked. It was extremely interesting. And I'm still not 100% sure what it was that caused the problem, but I have cured all the symptoms, and I'm not going to use this little tiny laptop, cute though it is, with Kinect next time I do this talk. It's just that it fits in the suitcase along with the sensor, and so there you are. But none of these are your problems. All of them are mine. And so what we're going to do today, hopefully, is show you a little bit about how the Kinect works and how easy it is to make software that does things with it. Quick straw poll. How many folk here have actually had a go with the Kinect SDK? Oh, there's a couple. Okay. How many folk here have got Kinect sensors at home plugged into their Xboxes? Ah, that's more. If you have an Xbox 360, then I would strongly advise getting hold of one. I didn't believe it would work. I was very skeptical about the platform when it first came out. But because I'm a Microsoft MVP, I bought a copy because one of these some things you have to do. I took it home, had a play, and I was so impressed I went out and bought one for my daughter the following, gave it to her for Christmas. It's just a really nice device. The only snag I would say, any advisory I've got, if you are actually looking at getting the sensors in the platform, is find a reasonably sized room. It's built for American living rooms, which are quite large. In the UK, we have the smallest houses in Europe, I think, and our lounges are quite small. So if you haven't got about 8 or 9 feet in front of the sensor bar, then it doesn't work particularly well. But if you can find a large room, it's really great fun. And there are some very good games, and I'll mention those in a second or so. So what you're going to get from me is hopefully some working demos. A bit about Kinect, how the sensor works, the Kinect for Windows SDK, how that fits in with the whole development thing. A demo, we're going to photograph some ghosts, we're going to make a head-tapping game, a kiss detector, and an augmented reality mallet, okay? I might be looking for volunteers for the kiss detector. We'll have to see how that goes. With a bit of luck, it might not work, and then you'll all be off the hook. But we'll see how these things go, because this is... I'm a very sad person, particularly when my demos don't work, and I code for fun. I like messing around with programs and seeing what you can do with them. And for me, the idea of making a camera, a Kinect program that will actually detect when people are in the frame and photograph them automatically, and doing interesting things with just the stream of bits that comes out of this thing, I find quite fun. So I like doing that. I play with code just for the hell of it, and I kind of hope that a few of the folk that are here now have the same kind of approach to programming. And the Kinect is another great vehicle for doing this. It's really nice for that. So we're going to go through it, have a look at all the various bits and pieces. I'll show you some of my code. Everything I show you, I'll put the deck and all the demos out for you to have a play with. If you have a slightly more powerful machine than mine, which is not difficult these days, then it will work fine. I did all the preparation on a two-year-old Dell Latitude 15 with, I think it's 2.2 gig clock on it. And it worked fine. That's an i5. And anything which is more powerful than that will work a treat. It's just this one's 1.2, and it's a little bit slow, even if I turbocharge it to the max. So you might see things chug a bit, but that's because I didn't have a very big carry-on case. But we'll be fine, I'm sure. So what is Kinect? Well, there it is. It's a little black box. If you go in the shop and buy one, that's fine. It is in the Guinness Book of Records as the fastest-selling gadget in history. They've actually sold more of these more quickly than they sold iPads when that came out. And they sold, I think it was about 8 or 9 million in about the first few months. And it was released about a year back. If you do get one, take a look at Kinect Sports. That's quite fun, although the bowling is really, really easy, which I quite like, actually. Dance Central 2 is very good, and there's a really good one which nobody knows about, which you can get a whole cheap, called Gun Stringer, where you control this puppet, and you're doing this, and the puppet's going along shooting at these bad guys. It's really, really funny. And that's a really nice illustration of how you can take a Kinect sensor and you can make gaming experiences that just you couldn't do any other way. So those are the ones I go for. That's my sensor. That's, in fact, that sensor there. And I sort of, because I'm me, I did that. The first thing I did was I did that to it. And if you look at my sensor carefully, you'll find the bottom's been pulled off. If you pull the little plastic, little metal grills underneath, you pull those out, you can then get at the Torx nuts and get the lid off. And so that's a Kinect, actually, in its naked form. It's actually more complex than that. If you view it from above, I haven't got a picture from above, but if you view it from above, there are three layers of circuit boards inside there, behind the cameras. There's also a little fan, which you can see on that edge, which pulls air through the thing to keep it clear, to keep it cool. It's a very, very complex device. It's tremendously impressive. In terms of what it has in it, we have a little video camera, which is sitting on the front. You can see it inside that highlight there. That's if I'm looking at the sensor from the front, that guy there. And that basically gives you a reasonable webcam. 1280 by 1024 at 30 frames a second. You couldn't make high-definition movies with it. It's not quite built for that. It's built for video conferencing and for capturing reasonable quality images in domestic conditions. So it's a nice camera, and it does make a really good webcam, this. If you're doing things like video conferencing, the Kinect is great for that. It's a very, very good device, and it works very well. And you can capture the video stream, and we'll play with that in a minute or two. On the other side of the sensor, you've got two other things that are very interesting. You have an infrared projector, which is this thing here, and an infrared camera on the other side. And these are the depth sensor. And it's kind of important, well, at least I think it is, because I like knowing how things work. It's kind of important you understand how this actually goes, what it does, how we actually get the depth information from the sensor. And if you actually look at how it works, that's a picture of my living room sofa, which is, yeah, okay, it works, you can sit on it. This is what the webcam sees, just an ordinary video image, and this is what the depth sensor sees. And I actually took this picture. I got a Sony Handycam with night vision and turned it into night vision mode and then darkened the room and took that shot. If you have got a Kinect and you want to do some really surreal stuff and you have got a Handycam with night vision, it looks amazing. There's little colored dots everywhere. It's really, really peculiar. But what the way it works is that there's a little diffraction grating inside the projector, which sends out an array of patterned dots onto the scene. And the further away you are from the object, the camera, the further apart these dots are. This is the arm of the sofa, and the dots are fairly close together. The back of the sofa, further away, you can't see it too well on the slide, the dots are slightly further apart. Now, the camera intelligence inside knows what the pattern of dots looks like. It's pseudo-random. It's actually not a grid, but it is actually known to the hardware inside here. So it can figure out that the further you are away from it, the further the dots are apart, and the more distant you are. And so what it does is it actually just works it out from that, and if there's two dots this far apart, it interpolates the positions in between. Now, it's not using radar. It's not using infrared that bounces off. It just uses this grid pattern, which it projects in infrared. And it works. It's very quick. You get 30 of these depth readings a second. The reading resolution, it'll do 320 by 240 or 240 by 480. No, 360 by 480, sorry. Because the new driver's just given us a higher resolution on there, which is not fantastic resolution, but perfectly adequate for what you want. And basically in the depth image, you get a depth pixel, a depth value, for every single point in the screen, which you can use to make an image. In fact, I can actually show you, well, you'll see it in a second or two when I go through the demo app. But that's how it works. There are some issues with this. Because the sensor and the camera and the projector are not in the same place, you can get things that are in shadow. So what you find is that edges sometimes have shadows behind them, where the sensor doesn't get anything reflected back to it at all from that dot. And if they go through windows and disappear, again, you don't get depth readings for those either. And the other issue which you have is that the further away you get, the lower the resolution is, because the dots just spread out further and further apart. But if you get too close, the dots become so dense that the camera can't resolve individual ones. Now, in the sensor you buy for the Xbox, this one here, When you get closer than 80 centimeters to the sensor, it shuts down. It won't read any more than that. It just returns those depth values as zero. On the Kinect for Windows device, they've reduced that to 40, because the Kinect for Windows device is seen for being used by people sat at desks using the thing individually, whereas the Kinect for Xbox is seen for use by a room of people playing body tracking type games at the far end. And it all works very well. They're saying that for the Kinect for Windows sensor, they could be able to track individual finger movements, which would be interesting. I haven't seen one. I'd like to see one. Maybe one day I'll get a hold of a copy. But so the idea is that we do get depth information. It's not using radar. It uses this rather clever grid arrangement. But the bottom line for me is it works. Look on the bottom of the sensor, along here, there are four microphones. 1, 2, 3, 4, arranged in an array across the sensor along the bottom. Now, these are not for four-channel sound. It's not for stereo. You end up with a mono signal coming in. But what it can do is it can do noise cancelling. So it can. This says software running inside the DSP, inside the sensor bar, which will detect the timings of signals coming in and then direct the sound array of microphones in that direction. And what they do is they basically noise cancel anything coming off that direction. And it actually, again, it's, as a webcam, brilliant, because it means that you can separate the voice from the background, and it all works extremely well. So you've got quite a nice set of hardware in there. And like I said, this thing is optimized for gameplay. Kinect for Windows has been optimized for a wider range. It's not like they've shortened the range, because it's the same fundamentals. They've just tinkered with the firmware. And change the way the software works. So you can use the Kinect for Windows device to play games with in a big room if you want to, or you can use it for close at work as well. And I'm looking forward to playing with one. It looks very interesting. One thing I mentioned, which I haven't put in the slides, for which I apologize, there's anybody here familiar with the Microsoft Robotics development stuff? Robotics Studio? There's a new release of that coming out. And if you're into robotics, this is kind of interesting, because they now have a reference platform for Microsoft robots. And the reference platform, Microsoft Robot with Kinect, I think it's, I forget the precise name, but the reference platform has a Kinect on it. So what that means is you now have a robot which has got a depth view of the world in front of it. And the Robotics Development Studio, which is a really interesting piece of software, which is a free download, what you can do with that is you can actually run an emulation of an environment, put your robot in it, and you'll get the visual view of the scene in front of the robot and the depth view, all done in the rendered environment, all faked. So if you want to make a robot and teach it to wander around a terrain or a room or whatever, get hold of a copy of the Robotics Studio, the latest version, the download is version 4. It's all free, and you can set your robot off and write code to make it wander around. So if you're going to get into robotics, then this is a great device for robots. And you can actually buy or build robots to the reference platform, and then you can build a configuration file for your particular robot in terms of how far apart the wheels are, how high the Kinect is, etc. Feed that in, and now you have a full emulation and development environment for a robot which is Kinect-aware. And that's actually really interesting. We're trying to make one in the department of the University of Hull where I work, which will wander down the corridor and find all the offices so that it can actually lead people about. And robot navigation is non-trivial because everything is relative. There are no reference points. There's no absolutes anywhere. You're inside a building, you've got no GPS. But we're going to set a few students off and see how they get on with that. It's going to be quite fun. But if you are here because you like fiddling with stuff, and who doesn't, then get hold of the robotics framework and start looking at how you could connect on that. The framework's basically, the robot itself is basically a platform with a laptop and a big battery underneath and a Kinect on top. And the idea is the one, it'll run for about 4 or 5 hours, I think, on the big cells underneath. As long as your laptop battery lasts, basically, which is pretty good. So there you go. Right. If you want to make Kinect for Windows applications, Microsoft say you should use the Kinect for Windows sensor. The two devices will work interchangeably with the software I've got here. So I could plug a Kinect for Windows sensor in. I'm using the final release of the SDK, which came out beginning of February. As I was mentioning last night, which was most amusing, They released two beta versions of the SDK, and I started playing with them and doing stuff. And then the final version came out in February, and they've changed the way the APIs work. And this would not be a problem unless you'd written a 12-chapter book on how to program for Connect. And guess what I've done? So I've now got to go back and change all the demos and all the text. The good news is that all the changes they've made have made the code a lot tidier. In the SDK betas, I'm looking at these things going, ooh, that's a bit, that looks to me like they solved the problems as they went along and built this thing accordingly. When they got it finished, they then went back and said, okay, now how do we factor this out correctly? And they've gone and done that. And so it's actually much more pleasing. For the explanation, for me, it's nicer because I don't have to say, this is the way it is. I can say, it's actually, you know, it's quite nicely designed. You don't have any nasty issues with strange meanings and values and methods that don't line up. The sensors are used in a very common way now, and it all makes a lot of sense. But if you make the applications for the actual for sale, then you should use the actual device. I guess one final thing to mention here. If you do want to sell your applications based on Connect, if you build an application for a PC that uses the Connect sensor and does good things and you want to sell it, then that's fine. There are licensing agreements that you can go through to that. But the idea is that Microsoft will make their money when your customer buys their Connect for Windows sensor to plug into your application. That's how it's going to work. So that's how they're driving it forward. But as far as you're concerned, if you have a good idea for Connect and you want to make a product out of it, then absolutely go for it. I've got one or two ideas I want to play with, and I'll try and get students on those as well, because it is kind of fun. And I'll do a demo now, and this one is this is the one that always works because I didn't write it. This is the one that comes with the SDK. So if you go to the connectforwindows.org website, and download the sensor SDK, then away you go. It's now, even as we speak, loading it up. Takes a few seconds to get going, and this is a good time to stand and look nervous, Robert. Here we go. And so what it does is it basically says, hello, that's a little marker for this sensor. And you can connect up to 4 sensors to a single PC. So if you want to have a wider field of view, then that's fine. You can see on the screen the sensors here. Oh, it's found your skeleton, sir. Isn't that nice? if I come down here and start moving in front of the sensor properly, there you go. It's found me. It's tracking me, and I can do. Oh, I've gone again. It likes you more than me. I tested. It's a little bit laggy because this is not a particularly fast laptop, but you can see that it's actually found me. It's found my bones. It's tracking me as a person. And I can get those values in 3D space. Along the bottom, you can see a moving dot, which is the microphones tracking me as I'm talking. So if I move, I think the speakers are confusing in a bit, but if I go to the right, hello, you can see, hello? Yeah, it's fine. It actually is directing the sound field towards me. So this is quite a nice demo. The right-hand screen, the lower resolution one, that's the depth view. And they've done a bit of artificial colouring here, so the further back I go, the darker I go, and finally it loses me. Now, the idea is that it identifies the pixels which are part of my skeleton by putting them in the depth field with a particular player number, and so what you can see there is, on the right-hand side, it has my skeleton, but it also has the mask, which it thinks is Rob, okay? And now you can use that, and we'll be doing some work to make an augmented reality game a little bit later when I show you how to do that. So you can actually pull out the pixels of the person in the scene and then use them however you want. So that's the easy demo. That's the one that I got to last night, and I was feeling at this point quite cocky. And the universe must have heard me because the next things that happened weren't fun at all. So anyway, I digress. I don't want to repeat or dwell on that. We'll keep moving forward. Any questions? I'm happy to take questions from the floor as I go. Any questions? Anyone happy? Okay, they all want to see if it works next, don't you? I'm trying to put off doing the next bit. Okay, right, the SDK. It's a free download. There's the website. Go down there, pull it onto the machine. One word of strong advice. If you've had any previous versions of Connect on your PC, then get rid of the old USB drivers. because they can get in the way and cause ructions. I have there's a way in Windows, I can show you if you like. I've got some text about this, and it's even on my blog, I think. Have I mentioned my blog? Rob, how many of you here go to robmiles.com? One there, good man. Anybody else, robmiles.com? It's world famous in my world. Okay, I put a blog post up there. You can get the device manager to show you every single USB device you've ever plugged in, ever. And it's quite amusing, because students come and see me with memory keys, and I load stuff up and look at it and put them back. And I have about a gazillion different USB drives with different memory keys and all kinds of things. And you can go through these and unplug and destroy drivers for devices that aren't connected at the time. And I've used that with the Kinect. I used the, there was the Microsoft one, there was a set of drivers you could get, and I had to get rid of all the NUI drivers before I could use the Kinect ones. But if you've never used it before, bring it down, install it, it's a one shot, you get the drivers, plug your sensor in, you can run that demo, and within 10 minutes you can be impressing the wife, probably. Mary was quite impressed, I'm quite happy with that. So if you run it, this is what happens if you run the SDK with a Kinect sensor. It says the Kinect sensor in your box is for Xbox 360. You can keep on going, but we don't guarantee it'll always work. That's just an escape clause, I think, as far as Microsoft are concerned. They're committed to making the thing go until at least 2016, which is a very long way in the future. And so, as far as I'm concerned, for hobbyists and home development purposes, that's not a problem. It will work fine. And of course, the user never sees that. That just appears in the output window from debug. So that's all good. Writing code, yep. You can use C++ in a managed, or you can use .NET, Visual Basic, or C#. It's not like the phone development SDK or one of the other, or XNA. It's not like a new project type for Kinect. There's just a DLL. So effectively, it's an assembly you bring in. So if you want to write F# using the Kinect sensor, absolutely no problem at all. So any language which is .NET, you just bring in the library and link through to it, and away you go. And I can show you what that is. That's very easy. That's a one step, and away you go. The fundamental behaviors are the same across all the languages. And the Kinect, because it's just a Windows app, you can run it from WPF, XNA, Windows Forms, or even console apps if you want to. So there's all kinds of API options for you. I'm going to be using C# because it's my favorite language in all the world and ever, and I really like it. So that's what I'll be showing you, but the samples will map straight across to any other language should you wish to travel a different route. I don't really mind. So let's photograph some ghosts, and this is one of these emergent programming things, because the first thing I did with my Kinect was, well, in terms of programming for it, you make a handle to the sensor. This is basically the kind of thing you would use It's funny because this time last night my remote thing started misbehaving, and then after that the demo didn't work. And the dot's very, very small. I need a bigger dot. This thing is a handle to my Kinect device, okay? And so think of it as a stream, but with a Kinect on the end rather than a stream, I guess. And you can have four of these in a program. And bottom bullet point's kind of important. When the Kinect's producing its video and its audio and its depth data, it kind of hammers the USB connector. So if you've got several of these on a single machine, don't plug them all in the same hub, because if you do that, they might fight a bit. So if you've got separate USB channels on your, just plug them actually into the box rather than into any kind of hub, because it does make a difference. And I was wondering whether that was one of the problems last night, but it wasn't. It was something else, which is quite interesting. So when I've got my program, this is a bit of WPF. This is basically on the loaded event. The Kinect sensor exposes an enumeration of the sensors on the machine, and I'm making the assumption. This code is very, very simple and not recommended, but it fits on a slide and it works, which I quite like. There's no error checking here. This is just showing you how the program works. Get myself a reference to the very first sensor on the device, turn on the color stream, and then bind a method to the event handler, which will fire when I get a new color frame. And once I've got my ducks in a row, start the sensor running. And that's it. I'm now capturing video. And the sensor will produce an event on that method about 30 times a second when a new frame comes down the USB. And that's how we start it going. If we want to, we can set properties on color stream to select resolution, and frame rate. So that thing, there are enumerations you can attach to that to actually control it. You can also, if you want, poll it. So rather than actually getting events fired when you get video information coming in, you can have a thread running which does polling, fetches them back. I like doing events because it's just easier for me, but you can do it either way if you want. There's also, if you have several, if you're using the depth scent camera and the skeleton tracker, they work exactly the same way, and they fire off different methods. Or there's a method you can use called everything ready kind of stuff. So that will then fire when you've got new depth, new video, and new skeleton data, which you can then combine to make your augmented application. Okay, so that gets the thing going, and now we're in business, we can actually start thinking about doing stuff with the video. So, that's it, this is my slow-mo. That's it, find the first sensor, turn on the color stream, get the events fired when we want to, pictures, and then start the whole thing going. I've forgotten you did that, that's quite clever, I like that, that's good. Very good. Well, I'm happy. That's good. I'm still happy. So programmers can poll, and I've got an event handler, and I'm going to get it at 30 hertz, which is fair enough. This is my byte array called color data, and what I'm going to get from the sensor is 4 bytes per pixel, GBRA, green, blue, red, alpha. No, blue, green, red. Why do they have so many different ones? It's funny because I did this in XNA, same thing. And XNA uses RGB. And I got the byte array, and I thought, great, this is easy. Byte array, whoosh, whoosh, and all the colors were wrong. And I thought, oh, poo. So I had to then write a piece of color, just went and swapped, did bit byte when you get the, because it looked great. I had this white door, I think, oh, white's great, it works. For my wife walked in, and she was orange. Oh, dear. And it's not good. Although you guys like orange, don't you? I forget. Yes, you do. You can do stuff. I like getting things into program form so I can play around with the data. And so that's what I started doing with this. So I made a little camera program. And this is my first image thing. And again, this is not very good code, but it explains what's happening. And it fits on a slide, and I quite like it. I open the image frame. When my method fires, okay, I get an argument. It's just like reading the mouse, really. You get the mouse event args, I get my color image frame ready event args. I extract the image frame, I then copy the pixel data out of it to my color data buffer, and I then set the image source for my WPF image control to the bitmap created from the color data, which is this, that part there. And 96 pixels per inch, this is the width and height of the frame. I'm using BGR32 because that's the thing that comes down the wire. If I want to use alpha, so that I want to have transparency around this, I can use BGR32A, but there's not that in the thing unless you've processed it. I don't know what null means. Anyone know? Gosh, I should know that one. That's the data, and then that's the stride. So again, just copy the stuff. I'm giving you all the code for this. And if you do that, you should get pictures on the screen. So yeah, copy the stuff across. Make myself an image. Now, this is not very efficient. If you run this, you can watch the memory trace go up and up and up because it makes loads and loads and loads of bitmaps. There's a writable bitmap structure in WPF which you can use instead. And that effectively allows you to make one bitmap and then write new data into it. And that will work a lot better and save you from having the memory manager going a bit nutso when your program runs. It's quite fun to watch. But bear in mind, these things are coming in 30 times a second, and they are quite big. So if you keep on making new ones, you will watch the thing go up and down. And in my book, in chapter 3, I have a big thing about this, which is quite nice. So you're going to buy it. That's good. I'm pleased. Right, fine. So I like having numbers. I can work with numbers, so I can detect motion. So I wrote a motion detecting program, and that worked quite well, although... and then I did some image processing, making the reds, the greens, and the blues change, doing solarization, that kind of stuff, and capturing photographs. And this is the point at which I thought, oh, this picture is quite nice, but it's a bit noisy. If you saw the camera image that was coming in, there was a bit of noise on the picture. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll try and get rid of the noise by doing some averaging, because that's one way to do it. So I'll average 50 frames worth. And because I'm concerned about performance, and I don't want to work out, do the sum 50 times a second, I'll actually use a rolling average. So the way it is, I have 50 frames in memory, because memory is cheap, I've got a lot of it, And the idea is that every time I get a new reading, I drop the new reading in place of the oldest one and then use the values from the other ones and roll it through. And I've done this before and it works quite well. And I got the camera going and I get a new average every frame and away I go. Is everyone okay with how that works? Does that make sense? So let's see what happens when you make it. And the fun thing about this and the thing I like about messing around with code is that sometimes when you do stuff like this, you get behaviors which are just really interesting. And quite often, they can come from bugs and mistakes. And that's my camera, and it's taking a picture of the guy in the front who's thinking, why the hell did I sit here? And it's taking a picture, and actually, this is the point at last night where it all went, and this didn't happen. This is the first time an audience has ever seen this, okay? Okay, and yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Right, so that's not averaging. That's just running with one frame. I have a slider on the slider. That's almost poetry, but that was last year. That poetry is so last year. On here, I can ramp this up, and it'll go dark, and then it'll get light again. What I have now is an averaging camera. It's taking 50 frames, and this is kind of weird. I walk up to it, and I stand, and I appear. And if I move, and I walk away again, it sort of takes a while to catch up. And this is kind of fun. I quite like this. If you've got kids, they'd find this amazing because you can wave and you sort of appear. And the picture quality has got an awful lot better as well. Although, like I said, if it moves, if you move the sensor, which I can't do because it's taped down, really weird things happen. And I have my slider, and I can slide up and down, and the first time I did this, I made a mistake. I forgot, when you change the number of elements in the averaging array, you must make sure that you clear them all back to zero each time. Otherwise, it goes horribly wrong. Except that it doesn't. If I turn off the average clearing and drop the number of sensors, I get really kind of, that's not a particularly good one. If I'll just move it about a bit. Now I get really strange effects where let's go back and then just do that again because it's not quite what I expected to happen. But you can get some very, very odd video effects now if you start moving these things around. So now I can do that and then I can actually flip that one off. And now you've got this kind of weirdness where if I go in here and move around, then it's just all very odd. Now if you run a nightclub and you wanted to sort of really do something which is kind of impressive, I've sat down and tried quite hard to figure out what on earth's going on mathematically here, and it really hurt my head. What I've got is I've got a buffer that can, I've got an array that contains the total values for all the 50 or however many I'm averaging with, and I have an array that contains each reading. I have an array for each frame, and the idea is that the numbers are hanging around somehow. I don't quite know what's happening, but I do know it's kind of funky. And if you could, I'm messing around with the slider, but if you could actually do this, I'll just take this, put it back to how it was, and then just do that one, and then whap this thing right down to nothing. And it's going nuts with noise. I think it's because this signal's very noisy, but it does all kinds of, there you go. Whoa. And so now you could programmatically fiddle with these numbers, and when people move in front of the sensor, all kinds of weird things happen. And I don't quite know what's happening, but I don't really care. Okay, the program isn't crashing. I'm not doing anything naughty with the numbers. You can set the values to clip or not. It's all great fun, but from the point of view of just messing around with code and getting interesting results, I considered that one quite a win. The other thing which is interesting about this, and probably the only reason it works on this platform, is the fact that I'm actually using unmanaged code and real, genuine C# pointers here. So if I take a look at my program, which actually does the image processing, image average, then what that will do is actually use just pointers to memory and then spin through them. I've had a look at some code on the web for messing around with Connect Data, and some of it's very useful, but some of it's horrid. Some people are doing things like creating arrays in the middle of for loops processing each pixel. And I'm going, what? And it chugs like crazy. This, it runs with reasonable speed on my little box, and on yours it'll go like a speed demon. It'll be fine. But if you ever played around with unmanaged code and pointers and things, it's a good way to get speed up, because I make one pass through, bang, 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 and these guys are doing array subscript accesses, which is far, far slower, particularly in managed. So take a look at this if you want to find out how to do it. And I'm just so pleased that worked. That's really nice. Happy days are here again. And what's that doing up there? I'll leave that up because it seems to be my lucky talisman. I'll leave you there. You're obviously my friend. So you've seen a ghost camera. Now, again, I didn't expect it to turn out that way. I was looking at making the quality of the picture better, and then I tried to change the averaging, and then it went nuts, and I thought, oh, I'll leave that in. Maybe there is a painting game. There is a button you can press on the thing. There's actually the save behavior in there as well. So if you put a save button on, you can bind it to a method you can call that will actually push out a JPEG of the image. You can do PNGs if you want. So if you do want, if you take a really nice one, and then whack it up. One other thing which has amazing results is moving the sensor. If you get the averaging, then you go, it goes whoosh, and very impressive. But yes, I'm just thinking about having strange substances and playing with the Kinect sensor and tripping out and things. But we're going to move on for now because that's all I want to do. So yeah, large number of readings, and changes take a while to appear. We get the ghostly effect, the people coming in. When we change the number of buffers, then if we leave the old data around, it can cause very interesting effects when it gets mingled with the new data. That's kind of interesting, and do what you like. Now, that's fine, and you can play with the image sensor and do that kind of stuff. You could use a webcam for that, although I haven't tried doing it that way. Depth data is where it gets really Kinect-specific and very interesting, because now I'm getting values from the real world, which are telling me the depth of objects from the sensor. And I get a 13-bit value, which is the distance in millimeters from the sensor back to the point it sees. If I get zero, it means there's no reading for that particular point, and away we go. And you saw in the first demo we had like a fake color, which actually gave you the information that was depth, and the further back you were, the darker you were. Now, what you could do is you could do things like you could image process, so you could actually have the things that are further away from the camera made brighter or darker, so you could flatten the image. You could do all kinds of weird stuff, and go to it. This is why I find these things so exciting, because you could wonder what happened if you did that. Well, let's try. Let's put some false color on. Let's make some spotlights that move around and follow you around the room. Why not? You could have the person lights up, and I'll show you that in a minute. That's actually quite easy to do. Just thought that's a good one. Yeah, okay. So in terms of actually tracking people, you can track six people, but only two of those are tracked in detail. So for two of them, you get all the joint positions, and for four others, you just get the center of their body. So you could detect them kind of moving in the background. The original SDK was a bit tricky in terms of how you would find and track individual people in a scene, but the new SDK is much better. Because you have this problem where you've got two people playing the game and the third person walks across the back and you have to kind of know what's going to happen next. And it's possible, it's easy with the new SDK to effectively find people and focus on them. That, again, is okay. Two people sounds a bit like a limitation, but in terms of the field of view, you couldn't get a huge number of folk in there. The field of view is quite narrow, and so if you want to do six people, it would be quite a party. It would be quite interesting, but it would be hard to sort of tell them apart. The issue with tracking is not the sensor. The sensor bar does. Did you have a question? Or just? Yeah. If you had four connects, good question. If you had four connects connected, could I do eight people? The answer is yes. But I would suspect you need a fairly meaty PC to do that. I mean, the issue with skeleton tracking is not really, it's a limitation that Microsoft have imposed on the SDK because they are concerned that people will get bad results if they try and do more than the process is capable of. Okay? So there must be a variable somewhere deep in the bowels of the code that says if it's two, then stop, kind of thing. But yeah, if it's two per sensor. If it's not that, I'll put it on my blog that it's different. But yes, take it from me, it is. I must try two sensors. That would be quite fun. But yeah, you get two people tracked in detail, and this is how they look. You've got 19 bones and 20 joints, and each of the joints is positioned in 3D space. So what you get is X, Y, and Z, in fact, on this coordinate space. So the idea is that the sensor is the origin here, and then you go X, Y, and then Z is just goes positive away from the sensor. And these are given in millimeters, and they work surprisingly well. I mean, you can do weird things. Of course you can. You could recognize people by their height because you could kind of figure out that to that will give their backbone. And you could even you could make a Kinect program that said, gosh, you're tall, whenever it saw me. Well, that'd be useful, yes. Maybe not. You could make a Kinect program that only works when I'm in the room because it has to have the tall person there, otherwise it won't go. Now, again, why not? It's giving you the millimeter values. It's just a bit of vector mathematics, and away you go. And these are your coordinates. So Z is only ever positive because the sensor just sees in front of it. The other ones just go X and Y, and away you go. And they're in 3D, which is fine. If you want to, you can take those 3D values and map them onto coordinate space in the depth image or the color frame. And this is one thing they've improved a lot in the final SDK, because it was kind of slow and clumsy in the initial release, and there was no way of doing it for a whole raster, whereas in the actual final release, they've actually got ways in which you can take the whole thing and map it across, and it works a lot better. So, what you can do is, this is my bone drawing program, or my method. I give it two joints, which are, say, that one, and it then makes a new WPF line, which it's the starting point and the end point, and it gets these things because... I've got a slow-mo, I'm sorry. No slow-mo here. We ask the Kinect to take the point from the skeleton for this joint position to a resolution of 640 by 480, and I'm going to get back a depth image point from that, which has got an X and a Y. So all this little bit of code here does is it makes... That makes the line, and this sets one end of the line to the position of one joint in the frame, and the other end of the line to the second joint. And so that's effectively how I draw one part of the skeleton. And then I just add that line to the canvas, and I move on. And in terms of drawing it, I then have a whole bunch of these. That's my left leg being drawn. Go from the spine to the hip, and then go from the hip to the hip left, and then go from the hip left to the knee left, then the ankle left, possibly singing a song which has a chorus, Dem Bones, at the end. It was very hard not to do that. So this is how you would do it. If you want to draw a skeleton, you might not want to draw one. It was the first thing I wanted to do. And in fact, there is some code that does this in the demonstration SDK as well. But I wanted to do it all by hand. And it seems to sort of work. You can also do this, which is another useful trick. I can take... my joint positions first and second, and what this does is a very, very simple bit of vector maths, which is that it works out the differences and then does that to get the actual magnitude of the vector between them, so I can measure how far two things are apart. That's how I'd find out how tall somebody was or that kind of thing. And there was a very good talk last night by a gentleman talking about gesture detection on Kinect, and the actual bottom line of his discussion was that A, it's very tricky, and B, we don't know how to do it in terms of what the customer is expecting to do. And that's all fine and dandy and completely correct. But for having fun, one way to do gesture detection is to do what I've done here, which is to actually make a thing which detects when I touch my head with my right hand. And I do that. So if you wanted to have a mechanism by which you could change slides in your PowerPoint deck by doing that, then absolutely. This code will do that for you. My version just plays the ding sound when you touch your head. It is as simple as that. I have an old distance value so that I don't get lots of dings if I stand like this. So this does the first one, is the threshold, then I move my head and back in again, and away we go. And this is the second demo, third demo. And so far, I'm doing all right. Everything in the garden is lovely. So let's go have a little look. What are you doing? Are you still? No, you're not there. You're my little... I like you. You're going to stay. Okay. So we've got tin head. And everything I've shown you is here. There's my line drawing. And there's my getting the skeleton. This is the event handler for the skeleton. And it's remarkably similar to the one for the camera, in that I've bound it to the event, the arguments, it gives me a whole bunch of skeleton values. I then have to iterate through those and find the ones which are properly tracked. And then having done that, here we go. If the state of the thing is tracked, then I can, that's my head and my my hip, and then I start rattling away, drawing things out. So again, I'm trying to put off the awful moment of running this, but here we go. I know no fear. There you go. That's running, although you can't really tell. If I walk into the field of view, then it should see me. There you go. That's me. Oh, hello, that's me. And that's why. And if I do this, but if I do this, nothing. If I do that, fine. If I turn round and do that, has it lost me? Oh, whoa. Not good. It doesn't like all these chairs, but it's basically, it's now tracking. Yeah, okay, stop being that, you. But you can see how this works, and the code is very simple. And I had this idea of having a game for two players where you basically had to hit your head as hard as you could, as fast as you could, and it counted how many hits you did. And then I thought, no, that's probably a bit too silly. But, you know, it's not, that's not doing too bad. And I quite like it. So you get the code. That's all fine. And I'm becoming mildly relaxed here. This is good because I've actually had, my demos are now working-ish. So you've seen Tinhead. Tinhead's nice. After this, it gets even weirder because I can track two skeletons. Fine. Okay. So now I can measure the distance between joints on each skeleton. So now we have the kiss detector. So I need a volunteer for this. Let's see if this works. This is a bit optimistic. What I've got here is exactly the same code as the head tracker, but I'm pulling the tin head, but I'm pulling both skeletons out, and I'm now looking for the distance between the two heads. And if it gets beyond a certain point, my program says, I say, steady on. And then if it gets too close, the alarm goes ding, you see. So this is a chaperone. If you've got a daughter and you're concerned about what might happen, you see, then you could set this thing up in the living room, and I can't see any way in which that could possibly end badly. Okay, it's bound to work, but then again, it might not. So nobody present. That's fine. So if I walk into here, and I do need a second person for this. Form a queue. Have we got somebody? No? Right. You'll do, sir. You'll do. What a man. Okay, now let's see if it'll spot us. If I had to walk towards it a bit. Okay, you're in. And now it should be showing. It's not showing me either. But if I do that, what happens? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. So it's saying all right. So hasn't found me. Maybe I should twizzle the sensor around a bit. In fact, I think it's found this guy that sat down. Okay. Well, it was just a thought. It can't see me. Maybe it detects genders. Yes, thank you very much. Big round of applause. Brave man. When they get Kinect sensors that detect genders, I'm retiring. I'm not. If you walk in and it says, hello, big boy, and I'm, oh, no, mother. No, we're not going to go there. Thank you for the thought, but we're now going to move on. Yes, I did wonder about whether this was a good thing to put in there, but whatever. Let's move on. Augmented reality is where the Kinect gets really, really interesting, where you start using all the sensors together. And what the Kinect can do is it can register skeleton and depth information with the camera image. It's not perfect because the camera has a different viewpoint to the depth sensor. There's a separation between the two. But you can, if you want to, if you have time, you can do calibration to actually, and the snag is that each sensor is subtly different in terms of how this works. So you'd have to do it on a per sensor basis. But you can get pretty reasonable behaviors anyway. And you can do things like blur the edges. If you're concerned about the sort of misregistration, you can put blur. I haven't done that, but you can do that quite easily. So we can use skeleton data to augment the video image. And this is me and my mallet. Okay, which I did this in my office. I look enormous. That door looks really small. What's happened there? It's just like a hobbit land I'm living in. what I have here is the video image, which has then been registered with the skeleton, which is being drawn on top. And then I've given myself a mallet for whacking virtual bugs. And the mallet is just drawn on top of the video picture. And so the idea here is that I can now actually go into a virtual world and I can squash virtual bugs with my virtual mallet. And the match between, I think this is actually pretty good. I think it's doing a reasonably impressive job on there. And I've not fiddled with that. That's actually just a screenshot of a little program that I wrote that does this. It's really hard if you're the only person in the room and I get a screenshot of yourself, like that's really hard. And so what I ended up doing was I've got a version, and again, this is in the code I'm going to push out. It basically takes 120 depth readings and then stops. So you can stand like this until it stops moving, then you can go in and capture screenshots. You could use voice response to actually give the thing commands, because the one thing I haven't mentioned, which I really should have done, this thing's very good for speech recognition. And if you install the Kinect for Windows SDK, you get the speech framework in there as well. So you can give spoken commands. In my book, have I mentioned my book?
Yeah.
In my book, I have a painting program where you can draw with your hand moving things around, and you can also select colors. You can say red and draw with red, and then blue and draw with blue. And it works reasonably well. It's not perfect. I had this brilliant idea. I thought, I'm doing my marking. I have every semester, I have 170 exams to mark, which is joy. It's lovely. And I thought, I'll have the Kinect so that as I'm going through the questions marking the parts, I can call the numbers out. So I can say one, and it'll say one, and then I can add the numbers up at the end, you see. Do it with voice response. And this went really well, because what I did was I had the speech side repeat the number which I just said, okay? Can you see what's coming here, people? Because I didn't. So I said one. And the computer said one. And the computer heard one. And so the computer said one. And then the computer heard one again. And I'm sitting there, and they're like, one, one. And the number's getting, right, fine. And so I had to put some delays in to try and make it work. And in the end, the snag was I couldn't get the accuracy sufficiently good to get it to work. It is very impressive, though, because you don't have to train it or anything. You just give it words, and it understands them. And again, in the book, it works for colours, not too bad. But I couldn't make it work with my exams. In fact, I had the same thing with red. Red, 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 red. So, yeah, watch that. The computer is incredibly good at recognising its own speech. That's the one thing I did learn. It's absolutely mustard at that, everything. If I could make the computer say it for me, it would be great, but that would kind of defeat the object, wouldn't it? You press a button, the computer says one, it hears one, it puts one on the... That's just daft, Rob. We'll move on. Anyway, this is how the mallet works. To get back to the plot, that's my arm. I have a wrist on the end of it and a hand on the end of that. And I just take this vector and I run the... I extend that, I normalize it, multiply them by the mallet handle length, and then effectively draw two lines. One is the long black handle, and the other is the big red head. And it's as simple as that. And these are drawn on vectors that I get from the skeleton data once I've forced it into 2D. I do have a problem. If the player does this, my program completely breaks because the vector for the mallet's now pointing into the screen. He has to do this, otherwise it doesn't work. Now that's to do with the way I've written my code and the fact I'm drawing my augmented stuff in 2D. If you want to go into 3D, you can try it. Registering a 3D skeleton rendered image with an image, a 2D video one, will be interesting. I haven't got that far. I wanted to have a go with XNA, see if I could do that, but I ran out of time. So at the moment, it's all 2D, and I'm getting the values, and all I'm doing is a very, very simple bit of maths. These are my the 2 points for my two joints, hand, wrist. I then just work out the x and the y values, and I make a new vector, and I then normalize it. That's the next slide. Yep. And then normalize it, and then I actually make myself a vector, which is the length of the mallet, and then I can start drawing things that length. This bit of code here just makes sure that if he's doing this, we don't bother drawing the mallet because we can't tell where. It just gets very silly. It flops around all over the place, as you'll see in a minute or two. Hopefully, if it works. So, I can add what you like. You could put big boots on and a hat and anything you like. It's easy. I mean, the way it works in my code, it's keyed for a right-handed mallet wielder, but a left-handed one would just use the other two joints. or you can put it on your foot. And so you've got all kinds of fun for kicking a ball or whatever you like. But I wanted to splat bugs, so that was just me. Next thing I can do, and this is kind of interesting, I can put the player inside the game. I can now start using the depth information to mask the picture of the player out from their surroundings and put them into a computer-generated environment. So now the player actually becomes followed. You could actually do this. It doesn't work too well, but you could think about faking your holiday snaps. So you could be in front of the Eiffel Tower, that kind of stuff. And you can do it with live video. This thing happens in real time. So you could actually cut the player out and paste them onto a backdrop. It doesn't work 100% perfectly because of this registration issue, but it's fun to do, and it has potential, which is kind of where I'm coming from. And the way it works is that when you get your depth image from the sensor, each pixel giving the depth into the frame is tagged with a number which tells you which player, if any, it's part of. So I have a raster, which I can then use as a mask, and I can pull out the pixels which are the ones that contain the picture of player one, and I can then do things with them. And what I do in my program, the Bugsplat game, is I have a texture which is the image. I have what I have is three layers. At the back, I have the video feed from the camera. In front of that, I have a texture with my augmented reality backdrop. And then what I do is I punch holes in the backdrop where the player is. And the reason I do that is a bit of a kludge because the player video picture is high res. It's 640 by 480, but my depth image is 320 by 240. So I'm knocking bigger holes through the mask to let all four pixels through. And it seems to work is the best I can say. And it's demonstrable, he said, with just a hint of trepidation. Here we go, Bugsplat. Now this is... this was behaving itself quite nicely. And so what we get now is Bugsplat. There he goes. There's my bug. And I must get into the game and splat it. And the bug took literally minutes. There's me and there's my mallet. Okay? And if I've got it... So now it's tracking me and I can just go... Whoa, bang. And then I got another one. Bang. And then... Oh, come back. Bang. Wait, bang. But anyway... Hello. I got a friend. Go on, get in there. Whack, there you go. Thank you. Get it. Go on. Now it's too late. You're dead. I'll get it. Right. No. Right. No. Hang on. There you are. We win. There's another one there. Now, it works. It works better than I thought it would. In fact, you're better than me. So there you go. Now, that one's mine. That one's mine. Thank you. And that one there. There you go. And that one there. Now. The really annoying thing is that last night, when nothing was working, I went back to my hotel room, fired this up, which is my most difficult test, and it worked first time. So I could have shown you this last night, and it would have worked, but I didn't dare, because by then everything, but I'd lost it. He's doing it. Thank you very much for your help. Thank you, sir. Good work. Yes. And he's still at it. That's lovely. Now, again, you get all the code for this. And there is potential there for having fun. Okay? I think if you did a little bit of smoothing, I'm not doing anything with averaging on this, I'm just taking the data as it is, and you actually tied things up, it could be the basis of something kind of fun and kind of silly, and in the same kind of vein as some of the simpler Kinect games you can get. I mean, the thing that I was quite impressed by when I played with that was the fact that with it being key to that angle, it really does feel like you're swinging the thing around. Because that's what you expect to have happen, and away you go. So, it actually works surprisingly well. In terms of what's going on inside, this is my mallet drawing code. It's all broken into regions, and I effectively have, the black brush for the head, black brush for the shaft, red brush for the hand. These things are built-in constants for the size of the arm and the head length. You could play with those. I've got a little bit of code in here which you might find useful. I used it when I was testing. At the bottom, I've actually got some code as well that's at the moment commented out that just draws a hit radius around the thing. I'm using very, very simple hit detection just basically to see if the things are within a certain distance. And this, when I was testing it, draws a magic circle around it as well so you can see what you're about to hit and what you aren't. As far as I'm concerned, it's good enough to be kind of fun, and it mostly works. So go to it. It does two-player, as you can see. Effectively, it just drops however many people it finds into the scene and gives them a mallet each. I don't work in terms of telling them apart, although I could do that, and away you go. So it's a reasonable basis for having fun, if nothing else, and so I put it out there just for that. And it works with the new SDK, which is also kind of good. So the new Kinect for Windows has an awful lot of potential. It's going to be able to track, I would suspect it'll do fingers, depending on what's around it. And but the bottom line for me is this is a platform in which you can start doing stuff you plain have not been able to do before. I was talking to someone it was one of these industrial functions where I had to wear a suit and try and behave myself, which is very tricky for me, because I didn't wear the suit for a start, which ended badly. And I was talking to this person, and I'm in Hull, which is a seafaring thing, and this guy was in charge of, forget what he was in charge of, he was saying, I had Kinect running. And he said, that's amazing, how does it work? Well, it measures depth and it can see things. Oh, could you put one on the bridge of a ship and detect if people were there and moving around? You know, you probably could. Okay, well, let's talk about that. I want to make sure there's always somebody on that deck, and I want to detect, you know, well, okay. I'm not sure about the privacy issues and what have you, but if it's a job thing, if it's a safety thing, we have to have a man there all the time, then, yeah, we could make a thing that will do that. They're using them on the underground for counting people's heads on platforms. You could do that too. There's all kinds of fun you can have with this. It works in the dark. It'll detect the distance information in the dark because it's infrared. It does its own projecting. So there's all kinds of fun you can have with this, and it's a wonderful platform for playing with it. And the robot stuff is just even more interesting. I mean, you could make a little helicopter and fly it around using a Kinect to guide it. I guess that's been done. I did a thing with a local Hull band called Home Sweet Home, and they're into electronic music, and they play lots of stuff from sequencers and video, and they use, what's the program called they use? It's a very, very, Ableton Live. And they use MIDI a lot. And so I wrote a little bit of Kinect software for them, which when you touch certain parts of the screen, just sends MIDI messages out. So now they can effectively do all this, and they can be driving the presentation. And I did it using the old Kinect drivers, the free ones, the NUI ones, and they were nowhere near as good as these, and they still had fun. In fact, I really must work on version 2, because we had a thing where they could design their own textures and put their own colors in, and when you touch certain colors, you get certain MIDI messages coming out. It's really easy to code up. And they had a lot of fun with that. And so there's all kinds of potential. Putting one of these in a nightclub and whacking that psycho thing on and having it just cycle through buffer sizes, that would be quite astonishing, because nobody else does that. But why not? And you could control the music with it too. So there's lots of potential for having all kinds of fun with this. So please do. And of course, buy my book. Which will be coming out as soon as we've finished. It should be sometime towards May, June time. I've got to go through all the chapters and fix the bits that are different. But it covers all the stuff I've mentioned, plus stuff on speech and some stuff on tracking individual points and things. And it's all good, clean fun. And that's, well, if anyone has any questions, we have a few minutes left for questions. So if you've got any questions, folks, then I'll leave that. I much prefer that slide. That's nice. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm Rob Miles. If you want to read my blog updated every day with something different, then go to robmiles.com. If you want to appear on my blog, and who doesn't, then smile. And I'll put your picture up there, because I have like a hall of fame, and that's where you're headed. And I did one. If you were at GeekNet last night I took a panoramic picture. I made a panorama of the whole thing. And it's quite funny. I took a lot of individual pictures and put them together. And that way I said I can have my audience in stitches. Panorama, stitches, audience, joke, right? Fine. Are you pleased it's over? I am. So I'll stitch it and put it up there on robmiles.com later. But before that, yeah, do we have any questions? Yeah? The question is, I have not noticed that at all in all the trials I've done. No. What it will do is if you come into my office wearing a dress, hopefully you're a lady, otherwise it's not going to end well, but if you have something which covers part of your body, it actually says that, okay, I can't see where these joints are, but I'll infer them. so you get a tag on the joints it can really see in the camera and chase. But the ones it's inferring, it'll tell you. So it'll kind of make a guess because it knows an awful lot about human anatomy in terms of where it's arranged. But no, that's something which I have no experience and no knowledge of, and I don't think it's the case. And any student that walks into my office when I was doing this would end up being tracked. And there were all sorts in there, and every one of them. Some of them make appearances in the book. Have I mentioned the book? And sometimes they appear as their bones, and they're kind of, you're in my book. Am I? Yes, as bones. Oh, whoa. And so, I've never had a problem with that. It's not something I've ever encountered. Any other questions? Yeah? If you go to connectforwindows.org, the link there, then there is a buy button which you can follow through on. But at the moment, they're very hard to get hold of. To be quite honest, I wouldn't let the lack of the official sensor bars hold you back, because from an API point of view, they just line up. The close-up stuff, yeah, if you want to play with that, then absolutely you need the new sensor bar. But just for playing with, then this one will work fine. You can map across later. It's a question of unplugging one, plugging the other in. But last thing I heard, there was a shipment of these things, but at the moment they're quite hard to get hold of. But that'll change. It's just a production thing. Yeah. I wish they made them a different color, because they're also black, which is annoying. I want them to be white, but as I was saying last night, if you want to get a white Kinect sensor, you have to buy the Xbox 360 Star Wars pack. Have anyone seen that? It's just awesome. The Xbox looks like R2-D2 when you've got like a gold controller with sort of wiry bits like C-3PO. And it's ace, and the sensor is white. And I have absolutely no reason at all for buying one except that I want one. But if I bought it, I'd have to sell the old one and move it all around. And so maybe I won't. Maybe I will. We shall see. I've got one in the airport on the way home. That could end very badly. But it's there. You can get them from Amazon, and they look really nice. But I think the Kinect for Windows should be a different color, and they made it black still. So there you go. Any other questions? Well, a little coffee, I think. Thank you very much for being a great audience. Remember me in your prayers.